Okay, good evening. This is the November 4th meeting of the Public Works Advisory Board.
November 14th.
14th.
Isn't it?
14th.
14th, that's right. What did I say?
4th.
14th. First, we'll, now that we've called the order, we're going to go through the roll call and if we'll start around over there as usual.
Noah Smuckler.
Roger Ewing.
Dan.
Breaking in urban water management plan. Discussion is new business. What we discussed last time was that it would be on the agenda. It's a new business item. It's the agenda grid plan. That's the continuing old business. And the reason we do it that way is that we don't have any substantive discussion, which we did avoid, of the plan, of the urban water management plan. The substantive discussion starts the new item. And that's just something more organizational, but that I promised Rob Schultz, for Brown Act reasons, how we'd handle it. So we'll put that under new business. And that's the only change I have, but it'll come after the highway transportation presentation. Is that acceptable to everyone?
Sure.
And
Mr. Chair, I might point out that the Caltrans representatives
just arrived.
Okay. Now, as a question on that, if they've just arrived, do we want to, I don't know what their schedule is. Having just arrived, we can move that up in the agenda.
Is it? That's okay.
Okay, if it's.
I was aware that you had other things.
Oh, okay. You might even enjoy them. And so then we'll accept the agenda with that modification. And then next is announcements. Does anyone have any announcements? And I forgot to mention we do have a full agenda, so we want to be cognizant of that, you know. And with that said, any announcements? And we'll start with Bill. Do you have anyone?
No.
Jane?
I have
one. We're in the middle of our state water outage. And I routinely monitor the water quality of my household water for maintenance of the systems, softener, RO, and so on. And I was rather surprised because normally I expected this time of year to have 300 or 400 parts of hardness without the state water. And the water quality actually improved. And upon querying Mr. Boucher, he said, yeah, that desalination plant works. Thank you.
The next is written communications. There's two I know of in addition to the one you're going to do. One is in the packet. There is a copy of the letter that I did send with the board's authorization to the city council, pointing out the actions we took in terms of the urban forest management plan. Then secondly, and Roger, if you would explain, since you supplied us.
Thank you. It's just a continuation of the report that Marla Bouton and Richard Sadowski presented to us at the last meeting. This is the fourth part to it. It's the last and final part.
As everyone may, who's been following this, recall, they've been doing reports on the status of the sewer system and with a focus on the relationship to Cayucas and some cost-sharing issues. And then I know Rob said...
Quickly, Barry, nice job on the letter.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yes, we received a copy of a petition today from Mr. Jim Hodges, North Morro Bay, regarding maintenance of the Highway 1 improvements through Morro Bay. And the vegetation management, and he may be here to speak during the public comment period. So I wanted to pass his letter and petition for the board to see also.
Before we open it for public comments, I want to first ask, how many individuals came to comment on the Caltrans? Okay. And on the urban water management plan? Okay. Okay, well then, it depends. Do you have ever the individual who wants to, who sent us the letter? Yeah. No, I'm going to keep them all. Who sent us, I'm not able to, it's one of my not able to chew gum and some or other at the same time. Let's open the public comments. And afterwards, we will have the presentation on the use of the recycling guide. We're going to try and keep the, because of the long agenda, we always go 3 minutes, and a little bit the wind down.
Leads. And so now we've had probably about 50% of our ocean view diminished by their bushes up to, I'm presuming now, 25, 30 feet high on the opposite side of the freeway. The point of this petition is to, I spoke to Janice Peters about it. She referred me to Bruce, and I guess Bruce referred me to Bob. And so that's why I'm here. I found out that Caltrans was going to be here, and that's great. I'd like them to hear it. I had spoken to Roy Free approximately 6 months ago after speaking to several other people, and they said Roy Free is a person who makes a decision on what is done along the freeway. At that time, he stated that their policy was not to trim trees for viewshed. And I stated, do you realize what you're doing when you do not trim the trees down? What you're actually doing is lowering the property values. I think I've kind of hinted at this. Next door to us on Nevis, and I think Nissan, I think they've got the sign has both streets. Three houses were built on either side. The first one to be sold was the front house. Now, who would buy first next to a freeway to listen to the freeway noise? Why don't you buy a few, buy back? And the reason was simple. They had views of the ocean. Those properties that do have views of the ocean, actually, when they are sold, you get a high resale value, and they also help the other properties next door that may not have views increase their property values. So to me, it's kind of shooting yourself in the foot to not trim out the bushes and make it as the town as pleasant as possible. Recently also, you'll see that in my petition, I mentioned the city of Santa Barbara. I drove through Santa Barbara recently, and it's a beautiful city. They must have an inn at Caltrans because they were out there trimming out all their bushes. There's no weeds. It looked beautiful driving through their city. So I believe that Caltrans may be on a budget cut, and I think they're being paid to actually keep up the city along the highway, and they are not doing a good job in my estimation. One of the other areas that I see is that we're a tourist town. I've brought this out that tourism is probably the main industry in this town today. You want people to come into a town that is very inviting. And having overgrowth trees and lots of weeds and so forth is not encouraging the tourists to come back and spend their money here. So I think what it would take to keep the town up is not all that much money. And so I'd like each one of you to sign this petition, send it back to me, and let's get a referendum going to pressure the Caltrans people to do their job here in the city of Morro Bay. Anyway, I thank you very much for your time, and I'd like to...
Thank you. Any questions?
Yes, I do have a question, Mr. Hodges. Have you talked to the people on the west side of the freeway?
I haven't gone door to door yet. When I talked to Roy, he indicated that he had received 6 phone calls and kind of told them the same thing. I do not know whether that was just in Morro Bay here or not, but he's had evidently people contacting him to cut it down. He did tell me that he only had like 3 people in the whole county that were available to trim out bushes and trees and this sort of thing. I don't know. This is a six-month-old conversation. It seems like his budget's been cut, so that's why I'm asking to petition not only the city to get on board on this, but the county. The county needs revenue, and you've got to get it from tourism, from increased values of homes.
Okay, thank you. Because the reason I ask is some of the people on the west side like the height of the bushes because it acts as a sound barrier for those homes that are closer to the freeway. How valid that is with everybody along the freeway, I don't know.
Well, I don't mind having them up. I wasn't asking for them to be taken out. I just say set a height, 10, 12 feet. They're already down probably 5-6 feet below the freeway. If they're 12 feet up, that gives them over their, you know, rooftop high that those trees could, those bushes could be trimmed down to, and they wouldn't affect the affect their sound at all. I mean, because so.
Have you also contacted Morro Bay Beautiful? Because they have had experience working with Caltrans in the past. Yes.
Well, I'm here to get anybody on board that would maybe take this over, and I'd just be a helper to them. Because
well, you might want to give Morro Bay Beautiful a call and at least discuss it with them.
Yeah.
And ask them, let them know what you're trying to accomplish, because they do have experience.
I headed down to visit relatives in Southern California. And as I do, I'm often frustrated and irritated and flustered by Caltrans, because they're doing such a gosh darn beautiful job maintaining the trees along the highway on 101, which clusters traffic there and makes it really frustrating as a driver, but also makes it very beautiful when you head back through. All the underbrush is trimmed, the flowers are blooming, there's millions of dollars worth of palm trees along the median. And when we had a median put in between San Luis Obispo and the edge of Morro Bay, I just kind of shook my head. I thought to myself, look at that. We just stuck up this huge slab of miles of concrete as a buffer. And we have this whole thing about not building any kind of structure that you can view from the scenic Highway 1, and then we just stick this slab of concrete in the middle of it for miles running down. And we could have put some beautiful palm trees like they did in Santa Barbara and kind of softened that look and really, you know, made it more beautiful instead of kind of treating San Luis Obispo County like a stepsister with a wart on her nose. And I would really like to see, as a personal citizen here, some flowers that... and shrubs and things that are going to be low cost for Caltrans and easy for them to maintain, because it appears to me on how things have been maintained in previous times that they don't really want to roll out here and do a lot of maintenance. So maybe what they could do could be easy to maintain and also not cost the city anything, because now from a Recs and Parks Commission standpoint, I hear a lot about how, and I know, I understand how the city is in tight budget constraints, and I wouldn't like to see any undue burden placed on the PWAB budget, the Recs and Parks budget, or anybody else's maintenance budget for flowers and landscaping. We have 13 or 14 parks that we maintain already. We have a lot of green space here, and anyhow, so... whatever you can do to, you know, gussy us up and pretty us up, because also as a business owner, I hear a lot from people who walk through the door, foreigners, and they say, man, that drive is really beautiful from Ventura to Santa Barbara, and then you come up and it's all open space, you're driving along, but when you hit that coming towards Morro Bay, why is it just all like cement like that, and just there's no flowers along this, you know, we don't plant wildflowers on the hills and whatnot. So, in any case, anything you can do to gussy us up, maintain a low budget, and get them to maintain it along the way would be really nice. Thanks.
Thank you. And it strikes me what both speakers have talked about is something conceptually we might consider in the next town the urban forest management plan is discussed, because it's really about how the city looks. And while it's not directly under the control of the city, what can we do in a more integrated fashion? I think both issues that have been raised are quite relevant to that discussion. Any other speakers? Well, then we will move on to the consent calendar, which... Oh, I'm sorry. I saw it. I'm so used to looking at the big ones, the big numbers. As we've done before, we've had public presentations that we feel are informative to the community, and this one is the use of the phone book recycling guide, and there's just been a new set of phone books on most people's doors. And with that, we'll ask Noah to introduce the speakers, and you have the floor.
Great. Thank you, Barry. And as part of our Public Works Advisory Board, one of our duties and areas of observation and reflection for the council and the city is our trash and recycling services. And with recycling, there is quite a bit of opportunity for savings as individuals and as our resources, and the opportunity to realize these savings can be as far away as the information to know what you can do with recyclable materials, where they go, and ultimately who to call potentially for more information or where to look. So gives me great pleasure to introduce tonight Mr. Peter Cron from the Slo County Integrated Waste Management Authority to introduce some key...
We're doing that. If that's okay, could we proceed to the consent calendar at this point, and then we can come back to the presentation. Is that without objection?
Fine.
Yep. So the only thing on the consent calendar we have, as usual, is the approval of the minutes of the last meeting. And are there any changes?
No.
No? Hey, hearing... none. Then the minutes are accepted as submitted. And we'll move back. Are we getting close? Because I think it will improve the presentation if we can iron this out, and we have items we can proceed to. And just, when you're ready, interrupt us. Is that okay with the members? Because I think it will be much better. Yes. The next, then, we'll do is item 8, the director's report, which now we receive as a report, and instead of reviewing every detail of it, first we ask the staff to highlight issues. Is that the order we do it?
Yeah.
Highlight issues that you want to make sure people... we're aware of, and then we go around and the board members pick issues they think are particularly salient. So while we go to Robin, he's handing it over to you.
I don't know yet.
Oh.
Go ahead, Bill.
I'm anticipating he may at some point.
Yeah.
A couple items that I wanted to talk about, as Dan mentioned earlier, we are way past the halfway point in the annual state water shutdown. What we've been doing since the start of the shutdown is operating the desalting plant. We're taking short-term deliveries from the state water project out of their storage, and we're running well 11A. I gave you the results of last week's testing that had the blended nitrate levels in the water supply at 7.5 milligrams per liter of nitrate. The test results we got from yesterday, they have dropped down to 6.6, so we're seeing an improvement in water quality as the desalter produces a higher and higher fraction.
And when is your next test due?
The next test is Thursday.
Okay.
That'd be tomorrow.
Fair enough, just because that's commonly people are interested in that.
Yeah. And the shutdown's over Sunday. So the state water will be coming back online Monday morning with full deliveries. And knock on wood, everything's going well. With regard to the collection system on the report, there was the notation of the steel pipe that we found, a leaky pipe suspended across the drainage ditch between Orcas and Mindoro Way. That was replaced today. The permanent repairs have been completed. We do have some cleanup to do and some landscaping replacement and stuff. But a new manhole and new pipe has been installed and is fully operational. The only other item I wanted to touch on for you was, quite simply, the Fire Station 53 Apparatus Bay Project. The City Council awarded the contract, especially construction of San Luis Obispo. And this coming Sunday, the 18th at 11 o'clock at the fire station site is the groundbreaking ceremony for that project. It's being held in conjunction with the Public Safety Awareness Day. That's kind of a multi-agency event that's being held there, and we will have the groundbreaking for that for the Apparatus Bay project at 11 o'clock on Sunday. And then the groundbreaking for real, in seriousness, for the construction will be the following Monday, the 26th. Thank you very much.
If we can switch back, we'll return after the presentation to, in the interest of their schedule, which we had said would be early, then we will return to the director's report with questions from the board. So take it away again.
Okay, so once again, my name is Peter. I'm with the San Luis Obispo County Integrated Waste Management Authority, and here tonight I'm going to talk to you about the recycling guide. The recycling guide is in the AT&T Yellow Pages. We chose this venue because it goes to just about every household, and we have an opportunity to get into every household with information about recycling. If you take a look at the outside, it's got a recycling tab on it. If you open up to R and recycling, what you'll see is a full tab that shows everything on there, and it even has a pull-out tab that you can actually mark inside your phone book for easy access. And motor oil, curbside motor oil collection, where you can call the waste hauler, Morro Bay Garbage, and have them deliver to your home a container for your waste oil and a container for your used oil filter. Once it's full, you call Morro Bay Garbage. They'll schedule a pickup to come pick up these materials. This is another part of the programs. It's available to curbside collection. Page number 3 focuses specifically on recycling. It's my favorite page. It talks about all the things that you can put into your blue bin, everything from all the paper, the metal cans, the glass bottles and jars, and the plastics 1 through 7. One thing that's important to remember about plastics 1 through 7 is that that does not include polystyrene or the foam polystyrene, like the styrofoam cups and the clamshells that you get from takeout restaurants. Those currently aren't recyclable in San Luis Obispo County. That's probably the only rigid plastic that we cannot recycle in the county. Page number 4 talks about commercial recycling and businesses and opportunities that we have there. Commercial recycling assistance is available through the Integrated Waste Management Authority. If you would like one of our representatives to come visit a business or visit your business, give us a call at 782-8530. We'll be more than happy to come out, evaluate your solid waste service, see what we can do to promote and help your recycling at that level, and design a program specifically for your business. We just introduced a new program. It's explained on page 5. It's the Take Back program. It's a program where you can take back your fluorescent tubes or batteries to retailers throughout the county. Currently, we have about 300 participants. This program was funded through a grant from the California Integrated Waste Management Board. This program allows you as the homeowner, or even as a business, if you're buying your fluorescent tubes or batteries from a certain retailer in town, you can take these materials back to these retailers, and they'll accept them back and provide for the proper disposal through this grant program. The City of Morro Bay take-back locations for batteries and fluorescent tubes is Ace Miners Hardware. And then for batteries only, we have Albertsons, Allied Hearing, City of Morro Bay, Del Mar Mart, Dollar Tree Store, the Morro Bay Market, the Morro Bay Mobile Mart, ASPA Ripple Graphics, Morro Bay Mail Center, Radio Shack, Spencer's Fresh Market, Strictly PC, and Vaughn's. And then for fluorescent tubes, main lighting takes just the fluorescent tubes. So there are a number of different opportunities for you guys to take care, take advantage of this program and keep these hazardous items like batteries and fluorescent tubes out of our landfills. On to page six, talks about hazardous waste. Hazardous waste disposal for there's home-generated hazardous waste and there's business-generated hazardous waste. For home-generated hazardous waste, we have a facility that's located at the Morro Bay Wastewater Treatment Plant. This facility is open on Saturdays from 11 to 3, and as homeowners, you're allowed to bring up to 15 gallons or 125 pounds of home-generated hazardous waste to this facility for free. It's a great program. It allows you to dispose of latex paints, pesticides, herbicides, all the things that you got gathered in your garage that you don't want to have around, you can take to these facilities. We also offer another program, which is a business program. This business program allows, if you're a small business, you generate under 100 kilograms or 220 pounds, 222 pounds for those of us that are metric challenged, of material per month. You can take that to our facilities once you schedule an appointment. And the information is on here. You can call our contractor, and he will be able to set up the appointment, accept your materials, and dispose of it properly and effectively so we don't have a lot of stuff polluting our waterways and polluting our streams. It's been a big benefit to the wastewater treatment guys, primarily because we're not dumping a lot of the stuff down the drain that we used to get rid of down the drain. Now it's readily available for collection and disposal. Page number seven deals specifically with the different wastes, talks about all the different items, gives you ideas on where you can take them, what you can do with them, computer monitors and television sets, the other electronic waste, hazardous waste that's out there, where you can take it, how to get rid of it. And it does have the one thing at the bottom of this page that's very important. Our hazardous waste facilities do not accept explosive material. So you can't take ammunition or anything like that. Contact your sheriff department to get rid of that. The other thing we can't take is radioactive material, but that rarely shows up in the home waste stream. You hope, yeah. Page number eight. Page number eight deals with hazardous waste and medical and infectious waste. Currently at our HHW facilities all the way through the county, you have the opportunity to bring your home-generated sharps. They will accept them from you at these sites on their operating days that are from 11 to 3, and you can get rid of them in that at those locations. There are other opportunities in here that are listed like mailback centers. If you cannot travel to these facilities, you may want to take advantage of the mailback centers. Those are wonderful opportunities. They're actually relatively reasonable from the standpoint of disposing of the waste, but our HHW facilities have one advantage over everything. They're free. Page 9 and page 10 deal with people who like to work on their own automobiles and what to do with those materials. And it talks about what to do, the proper disposal of things such as antifreeze, brake fluids, coolants. One of the things to remember, very important items, is that antifreeze is very dangerous to pets and animals. Receive at the materials recovery facilities. By far and away, I think it accounts for about 30% of all the volume of material coming in. It's astounding the amount of junk mail we get that's recyclable. It's wonderful that we can recycle it, but the problem we have is why are we getting it to begin with if it's junk mail? So there's some opportunities there for you to maybe write to some people or how you can notify some mailing houses to get yourselves off the list for some of the junk mail. And then we talk about packaging and shopping EarthSmart. Part of that is bringing your own bag to the grocery store and or taking a look at the products that you're purchasing and making sure you're buying products that have recycled content. And, you know, a lot of this information, we cover it briefly in the recycling guide. We touch on it briefly in the recycling guide. There's a tremendous amount of material at our website at www.iwma.com, and I'll show you that, and that's also in here. Once again, back to page 12, we talk a little bit more about eco-shopping and recycling. We kind of refresh everything there one more time, make sure that people understand what's reusable, what's not reusable. You know, when you're talking about recycling, the best thing you can do in recycling is not to put it in there in the first place. If you never generate it, it's really easy not to have to recycle it or throw it away. Page 13 talks about our school-based education program. Class presentations we deliver to grades K through 12. It's a wonderful program. They get an opportunity to take a look at classroom interactive activities and also do field trips out to the landfills and the recycling facilities. If you guys ever have an opportunity to go on one of those field trips, I definitely recommend it. It's enlightening when you get an opportunity to go out and see what happens to the material once you put it out on the curb, once it goes in a truck, and what happens to it. All too often in society today, we put everything on the curb and it's gone. We don't have to think about it twice. If you have the opportunity to go out there and go on one of those field trips, you will be amazed, aghast, and hopefully appalled at some of the stuff that you see going in the landfills. Or impressed, too, actually. And then home composting. Here, you guys at PWEB, you guys have the wonderful resource of Noah Smuckler, probably the most innovative, creative vermicomposting guy on the planet. He actually has done some wonderful stuff with that. He was part of our school education program for years. So Noah's he's a tremendous resource for us. As a matter of fact, we still use Noah for some of the stuff that we do. But it's wonderful. Yeah, come on. It's wonderful. He does a wonderful job with what he does. And then the last page on the recycling guide is talks about the resources in the landfills, the different city contacts, the different municipal contacts. You can go back through there and find just about anything you need to find with regard to contacting somebody. But a lot of information in here, a lot of easy accessible information. Probably the most important information in here are the phone numbers. So if you have a question, you can actually call somebody. If you call our offices and you get a hold of a person, Monday through Friday during business hours. Unless we're all on the phone, but you always get a person. We tend not to put you off onto something else. If you call in on off hours, you'll get our recycling hotline and you get some opportunities to go through. And then once again, one of the better things you do is you can go on the website, on our IWMA at IWMA.com website, take a look at that. That's got some incredible links for you to be able to go out, take a look, and find out some more information on any specific topic that you may want to learn about. Yeah, all this is inside the AT&T Yellow Pages. They should be delivered to your door, to every one of the homes and businesses out there. If you don't have one or need another copy, you can order one by calling 1-800-848-8000. They're also at most of the Singular Wireless stores because they happen to be an AT&T customer. Once again, any additional information that you may want for this or any other recycling opportunities, please visit our website. I think it's probably one of the best resources we have out there. The website has information out there that links you all the way through to everything from zero waste activities all the way through to home composting, to hazardous waste, to talking about the best method of getting rid of ammunition and all the other items that you can think of. I mean, it's got it all on there. And our recycling hotline, once again, is 800-400-0811. And if you have any questions, I'm more than happy to answer them.
Yes. Well, any questions? Certainly the comment of thank you for a terrific presentation. I learned a number of things I didn't know before. And we'll just go around.
Actually, I don't have any questions. I think you answered everything one could possibly ask. And I thank you for bringing it to our attention. Also, I think it's a good idea to do this every once in a while because we all, human nature being what it is, need to be reminded of things that we should be doing but often forget to do. So thank you for updating our responsibility to the planet.
Oh, you're welcome.
I had a couple questions. It was good to know that we could recycle junk mail because that is a lot, and very good to have the address where we can write and maybe get rid of some of that junk mail. If we have, we're writing on paper and we throw the piece of paper into the trash, do we have to package in any particular way, or is that acceptable to do that?
They create a lot of challenges because of the type of material they contain with milk, first of all. And that's an attractant for vectors and nuisances. And the separation process is very costly. And so the manufacturers that were trying the separation process ran into difficulties. The unfortunate thing about milk cartons, and particularly the fiberboard milk cartons, is that they are made out of virgin material, and it cannot be recycled. If you can get it in glass or you can get it in a plastic bottle, it's better. But I know they're not always available.
Thank you.
Sure. Bill, do you have any questions?
I can ask. When I dismantled my darkroom, I had a bunch of stainless steel tanks. And they're all 316 stainless, which is not plain stainless. Now, I took a felt-tip pen and put a mark down those type 316 stainless. Do you think they really got separated out? And
depends on where you took them.
Well, I put them in the recycling bin, you know.
They got taken out as metal and as stainless, and so they probably got recycled in that light. They didn't know they were 316. 316 stainless probably doesn't mean a lot of people. To a lot of people, it means something to me because I worked in a machine shop for years. But for most people, they would look at 316 stainless and go, it's stainless. They'd flick it into a stainless bin. Yeah, thank you for your help, though.
Well, I have a number of questions that were generated of when you're talking about plastics, 1 through 7, there's many plastic bags that are 2, 4. So could you comment, because that's confusing as to what to do with bags.
Plastic bags are a challenge in a lot of respects. Plastic bags, we would like you, there's two opportunities. You can take them back to the grocery stores. The grocery stores will accept them and bag them up. Or you can actually bag them up and put them into the recycling bin and take them. Oh, they will recycle them that way. In your blue bin. We tend not to advertise that too much. Of course, now I've advertised it all over the place.
But it's
but it is acceptable to do that because they do recycle it. I would rather they would go into either a recycling bin or back to the grocery store, either one of those rather than anywhere else, primarily because they're probably the number one pollutant that's going into our oceans right now. And plastics in the ocean and plastic debris in our oceans now is probably one of the largest challenges that we're going to leave our younger generations, because there are areas in the Pacific now that are miles across that have nothing but plastic floating in them. It breaks down and gets smaller, but it never goes away.
So that includes the bags you get at the grocery store.
Absolutely.
The bags that come when you buy something.
Absolutely. And any plastic bag like that, okay. 2, 4, they're all fine.
And then, you know, the impossible to open wrap plastic that you need a razor blade to cut and you bought. I never have seen a mark on that to indicate the number.
That's I think that's a Saran in a lot of cases. That is not recyclable.
Okay. And then you mentioned waste oil. And after we heard about the problems with the sewer and how disastrous it is to put any oil, including vegetable oil, down, what I did was started now saving my oils in a jar and putting it in the garbage. Is there any way, there's no program, or would they accept it at the recycling center? In other words,
that would be more of a hazardous waste issue. The problem with vegetable oils, you can bring those in also. They'll take those also at our HHW facilities. But the proper disposal of those goes through a rendering plant. That restaurants use a rendering facility, like Salinas Tallow. They come in and take those fats away.
What we want to do is not put them into the sewer.
Well, yeah.
And so what's the best? What do you do in your household with the vegetable oil? That'll answer.
There you go. Well, typically what I do is I take it in and I give it to a buddy of mine who has a restaurant and I dump it in his oil. But he's not looking, yeah. Because you don't want liquid waste going to the landfill either, because liquid wastes tend to leach.
So if you can, take it to the recycling center.
That's probably one of the better opportunities.
And then when you said radioactive, that wouldn't include fire alarms, or would it?
Those are hazardous. They have to be treated as hazardous materials.
Can we take them to the hazardous
one? Yeah, you have to either take them there or take them to one of the landfills where they treat them.
You meant higher grade radioactive when you said none of them.
I understand, but low level we can take
them. And I didn't see miners on the fluorescent tube list, but that's where I take mine.
Yeah, they're at the top of the list. They had both batteries. They do both.
I missed it.
They do both. Okay. Yeah, they're are actually one of our heroes in this program. They were one of the first retail outlets to step forward and actually take this program on.
And I think I considered myself a recycler, but I think, as Roger pointed out, you know, revisiting the issue periodically resensitizes, because you can not realize some things, and there's clearly changes that will evolve. And I want to make sure I
attach the detectable warning, the yellow truncated dome pads. So we've completed that program for another year, and we'll revisit that again next year.
And now, again, do you have any further items on the director's report?
They took care of them.
Okay. Dan, and then we'll go to you next. Give you a chance to sit down.
Director's report.
you had some items.
I did have one, thank you. Just a question, if I may, please, Bill or Rob. On the staff report for, that's agenda A5, I'm sorry. Not right now. Nothing on the director's report, thank you. What is this?
No, I didn't.
The attachment regarding the transportation?
Yes.
I was just going to ask for some context on that. I think that's the question. Or is it more specific?
It's specific to some funds. Do you have it in front of you?
Yes.
On the last page, there's a bullet on the top, the trolley signage, and then the estimated project cost is blah, blah. And the remaining, $2,040, would come from the general fund. Other than that, are there any guarantees that other monies will not be coming from the general fund? And why isn't that $2,040 mentioned in the resolution as coming from the general fund? Am I asking a question on a class, or do you understand?
Oh, no, I'm clear on the question, but I will admit to absolute ignorance on the subject.
Okay, that's fair.
This is a Ms. Burlingame item, and I can't answer.
All right. Well, it's a minuscule question. It's only $2,040.
It was approved by City Council last night at their meeting last night.
And we had heard the plan. I think this is the application that was contained in the transit plan that we reviewed before it went to City Council.
No, you're right, it is. I just was curious as to why that figure, the 2040 coming from the general fund, was not in the resolution. But you just stated you can't answer it because you don't know, so I withdraw the question and leave it at that.
I would encourage you to contact Ms. Burlingame, and she can provide you with a full, luxuriant answer.
If it is a burning desire, I will do so. But at this point, I don't see that happening. Thank you, Bill.
Dan?
You know, I'd like to just point out something, or maybe discuss it real briefly. I'm sorry, this is on the Harbor Walk project. Again, this is kind of my favorite subject here. The fact that you said the project might be extended, maybe you could talk a little bit about that to us. And then the second thing is, you talked about memorial benches, and members of the public may be interested in those memorial benches, so could you talk a little bit more about that as well?
Oh, yes, certainly. As the note indicates, we've been in contact with the State Coastal Conservancy, who is one of the funding agencies for the project, and like many funding agencies, they really like it when an agency performs. So we are spending their money. Their staff has come to the site several times during the course of construction, and they're very happy. And there is a chance, and I just say a chance, that there may be some additional funds available that may make it possible for us to continue the project and work it down to Beach Street. As you recall, when we brought the project forth about a year ago, when we were looking at the plans, we didn't have enough money to extend the walkway all the way down to Beach Street to tie into the remainder of the sidewalk. So we went as far as we could, which was from the rock down to the power plant intake building, and we're looking at the possibility of being able to extend it across the Coast Guard Harbor Office and past the restaurants and both T piers.
And where would it be? Where would it actually physically be, the walkway?
Well, that's part of the discussions that we're having with the other departments. As you may be aware, there's been plans put forth to build a new combined Coast Guard Harbor Office facility. The area of Verges Landing, Harbor Hut, and Great American Fish Company have a proposal to renovate their properties. So we're working with the other departments to see where these are. We don't want to get in anybody's way. We don't want to propose to build something that's going to get torn out in 3 months. At the very end, by the beach access, that's the rock hewn from rock from the rock. Those are available, and then the more standard wood benches are also available. The rock benches are more expensive, but they last many times longer than the wood ones do. There are a number of spots, and we have the plans are at the office, and I encourage anybody that's interested in it. We just had a lady come in today that's interested in doing a memorial bench. It's a great spot. As you see, we have a couple of promontories on the Harbor Walk project where there's great views of the bay and the entrance, and then every couple hundred feet along the way, there's little rest areas where we'll be putting additional benches. So there's lots of opportunities.
Bill? That concludes the bifurcated director's report, and now we'll, as we do have recurring old business, quickly look at our just agenda plan. And for December, I think we have listed, as we said last meeting, depending on whether there's a December meeting, revisit the urban forest management plan. Hopefully we would have a reply from the council by that time. And I understand the Morro Bay Garbage Service rate adjustment application will not be next month, but would be January. Is that accurate?
Yes, that's accurate.
Do you know of any staff items for December at this point?
There is one item that is Morro Bay Beautiful would like to present in conjunction with public services staff for the proposal to place cigarette butt disposal containers attached to City of Morro Bay street sign poles at various locations around the city that are frequented by cigarette smokers so that the cigarette butts don't end up in the street.
Is that have a timeline that makes December more timely than January? Or
I think they're looking to get this out into the community, and they have them at several locations already on private property. I think there's one at the post office.
So I hear you like to have the discussion sooner rather than later.
Correct.
So that would be an item for December then from a joint presentation with that you would organize with Morro Bay Beautiful.
Correct.
About, we call it the Butt Project?
I think that's what they are calling it.
Yeah. And then would that be too soon, or you would talk timely maybe to revisit urban forest management plan? Because aside from have we heard back from the council in a letter we sent them asking, pointing out some, we thought, activities to help move forward, I think the discussion needs to be had about now that the tree mapping, Rogers told us last time, is complete, where do we go from here to keep things moving? So that would be, so in conclusion, everyone agree we'll revisit forest management plan next month?
Providing we've gotten word from council as to the direction they want us to take. Otherwise, without council's answer to your very fine letter, what can we do?
Which we can always we put it on contingent on that and say we're not going to discuss it, because if we're the only item, we're that item, but it sounds like we want to get it going, so we're going to meet anyway. Why not leave it on, and then we can announce we haven't gotten a response. I guess... Yeah,
that'll be fine. That'll work.
Yeah, I don't think they already have the one letter, writing another letter saying we haven't heard anything since the past letter is, I don't think, necessarily the way to go. They, I'm sure, read the first one. And then in December, we'll talk. We already know that the garbage service base year rate adjustment will be presented, and action, I believe, has to be taken. And then next month we can decide on what will be in January, if any, from the board. And we didn't get the projection up. All we're doing is, as a recurring item, trying to make sure, at least a little bit in advance, that we have, like we had the public presentation tonight, get those scheduled, and also make sure we cover, which is the priority, the city business is initiated by staff. So now, with that...
Involves replacing the existing chain link fence and perhaps some gateway fence features. I'm afraid I'm going to use the wrong terminology for that, and the Caltrans safety people will be after me. What we're looking for is for the board to review Caltrans's project report, ask appropriate questions related to the design, recommend conceptual approval of the project, and request Caltrans provide the city with a draft maintenance agreement for our review and comment, and to forward on to City Council for potential approval. With that, I'd like to introduce Lori Cummings from Caltrans. She's a licensed landscape architect and the project manager for this project.
Thank you, Rob. And I'd also like to introduce Julie Quinn. She's the environmental journalist.
Can you hear me? Is it working? Okay. We met with Rob and Bruce Ambo a few weeks ago, and they actually invited us to come here tonight to kind of present the project, bring you up to speed with where we're at, and get some input so we can move forward. This is a transportation enhancement project in the city of Morro Bay, and the location is... right along the Strand area from about the 41 on Highway 1, from the 41 to Yerba Buena at the end of that area. And really the whole thing began several years back. Just give you a brief history. We had another project that we were getting input from the local agencies and community. All the communities within the Highway 1 corridor for proposed enhancements. And unfortunately, we got it to the point of where we could proceed with the project development, and the project was not funded. But the upside is that all of those input items for those enhancements folded into the corridor enhancement plan that ended up being the document that gave Highway 1 its National Scenic Byway status. So after we received that, we are using that document, the CEP, for future enhancements, and we can also use it as a base for going after other funds, such as transportation enhancement grants, which is exactly what we did on this project. So once we took a chunk of those enhancements, we decided that this was a worthy area in the corridor that could use some enhancements. We put in the application and actually received the funding for it. We have $900,000 to proceed in this area to this project, to go ahead and build the project. That money includes support costs as well as the capital construction costs. So it's not a huge amount of money, but it is something that we felt we could get the most important items, which was in the interest of what we developed early on. Most of the input prioritized the items to be, number one, the fence needed enhancing, and we're talking about the fence on the I-1, on the Highway 1, from 41 to Yerba Buena on the east side only. A lot of it has rusted, and it just kind of looks unsightly a lot of the time. So we had always gone into this, and I believe, did you all get a packet with the project report?
Yes.
Okay. In that, one of the first attachments was the application itself. And we started out by taking the first priorities, which was some sort of a decorative fence. We worked with all our project development team members, the locals, as well as our own maintenance crews, find out what we could come up with. Other items that we had on the list were gore areas, which are those kind of leftover areas where you have on-ramps and off-ramps. And at the time when we were developing this project, those were in kind of a disrepair, and it's nice to add and enhance paving in those areas. We also talked about using enhanced paving in the enhancement. So we were left with the number one item, which was the fence. And when we went to improve the fence, we found out that we were in the clear recovery zone, and the safety officers took a look at it and decided that we would end up only being able to have the chain link fence that we have. There's various reasons for that, mostly because we can't take any hits with a decorative fence and still have it turn out to be something that wouldn't cause harm to the vehicle and the passengers. Excuse me. So, we ended up with coming up with what we're calling a fence end feature. These would be at the two intersections at both San Jacinto and Yerba Buena. And we're at the point right now where we're just talking about what those could be. Some sort of a definition, entry to the community sort of things. And we have a few concepts that we'd like you to look at. And also, keep in mind that we'll be looking at future maintenance of those. We've met with our own maintenance people, and they cited a few issues that we need to look at. There will be possible hits from cars and also possible graffiti. So keep that in mind when we're talking about materials and future maintenance and some sort of an agreement with the city about its future maintenance. I'd kind of like to turn it over to Julie now, because the other issue that we need to look at is an environmental issue, and that's because we have visual issues, and in an enhancement plan, we can't have any visual impacts to go after our coastal development permit. So, could you talk a little bit about that?
What we're looking to do is some public outreach, and so number one, maybe looking to you for some suggestions that way. Also, we're thinking that we could have some kind of an informational public meeting, kind of informal, where people could come and they could see what we're proposing, where we're proposing it, and get some feedback. Some of these end treatments could potentially be an issue for some of the homeowners that live right in that area. As far as views, it's not blocking any, as far as we know, but just outside of their house, you know, whether they want it there. I really think we need to get some public input before
That stretch, if I can interrupt, it includes not just homeowners, but just property owners or businesses. There's so many businesses there, some restaurants. So it's everyone included.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So we're kind of looking to see, you know, if our suggestion of informational meeting is the best way to go, or if you have any suggestions.
We had
Mrs. Sulu got up earlier asking for landscaping in the median and along the side, and another gentleman, Mr. Hodges, of course, was very concerned
mm-hmm.
about the effect you're talking now about the growing to be too tall.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a plant system, vegetation system, that can hide the obvious fence-looking design? I mean, the fences along the east side.
Are you you're talking about the whole the chain link fence?
Yes.
The whole idea about hiding that fence is blocking views.
Well, if you go down Main Street,
mm-hmm.
which is basically the view to your left that you'll be blocking,
mm-hmm.
There's not much to look at. You're looking at the other side of the freeway, which has all of the hedges
right,
and the
right.
shrubs. And the fence, I don't know whether you're aware of it, the fence often becomes a catch basin for plastic bags.
Yes.
For trash, etc.
Automobiles.
Now we are talking about doing some landscaping along that's something that we can do, but I also know that with this project it can't be a landscaping.
Well, the landscaping doesn't have to be any higher than the top of the fence.
Part of the project. This board here is actually we're talking about kind of sticking with the same plant palette that Morro Bay Beautiful is tending to. That was our original planting at just those corners, and trying to extend it down the fence.
Yeah, because that fence, you know, could get boring very quickly.
Definitely.
Okay.
I think you asked about, and turns out there is water here. Bill was out. We were trying to get you some more water. We didn't see your water bottle. To answer your question, and I'll ask Bill or Rob to comment, one thing that's happened in this city is on a particular project, like it was last, I think, on Mansonization, they had a Saturday workshop kind of thing, well-publicized, where anyone in the city could come. And I don't know, can't something like that be considered for this? Because I think we have a lot of the obvious kind of questions that Roger has raised, and to understand the limitations are important for the community then to understand why X, Y, and Z were done.
Right, right.
Is that...
I think that is possible to organize some sort of open house, or I don't know that we'd want to do a formal presentation or just have it open for a couple hours so people could drop in, ask questions,
and see
make comments.
See what we're proposing, get their comments, see where we're proposing it.
We already have any kind of a meeting. We're hoping something soon. Do you have anything in the month of December that's already pre-planned?
That we could possibly use as an informational kind of a reach out.
Or our meeting.
It's kind of difficult to get on an existing meeting, especially if the agenda has already been set and published. I'm not sure what the Planning Commission agenda is like. I think it's pretty full coming up.
Yeah, that may not be the best way to do it. We were just thinking that, you know, kind of an inexpensive way that we can...
I think what we could do is... perhaps community center, library, to have a time, a couple hours time that people could just drop in.
Pick up a flyer, look at the
We could boards. Create a flyer that mm-hmm. Would do something like that.
I think
and I can work with both of you to work on something like that.
I think the key would be the twofold. One.
How about you give them a boost at the Merchants Fair?
When is the Merchants Fair?
Merchants Fair is the weekend after Thanksgiving. It's the Saturday. Is it Sunday?
Yeah.
That's a
good idea.
The Merchants Fair downtown Association.
Are there a lot of people? Is that like a lot of local people?
I don't think it's instead of. I think that's a very good idea because people will talk if you can spare the time,
mm-hmm.
and then. Since I live out that way, I don't mind leafleting all the front edge
mm-hmm.
of it to make sure because the on down to River Wayne and the condos near the end. We can get that organized for, I think, a two-hour workshop or meeting where people can hear about it and see it and say, what don't you like about this?
Right, and give us their comments. That's really what we're looking for.
And your deadline is?
Yes.
When I say that you said, gee, please, December, that implies to me that you have a date beyond which you've got to move to whatever the next step is.
The next step would probably be getting the project development team back together first thing in January.
And since staff has volunteered to try and organize that, and it would have to be done very quickly in order to have the publicity for people to show up, because we usually have at least 10 days to let the newspapers, but it could be done, and if a leaflet could be developed, then I'm sure we can, I know we can get some of the critical areas leafleted. And since I've walked the cloisters anyway for exercise, So I felt that was a really critical issue, and Rob had alerted me of figuring out how to do the outreach, and that's
right.
Why there is already, they did someone, there's someone, members of both the Recreation and Parks, or is it Parks and Recreation? And Planning are here, who can carry it back, but he said about the meetings. And now, if we at least address that, which was critical, if you could proceed with any other aspects, more leeway to get in, and we want to maximize that.
Does Mr. Ambo have another Mansonization meeting lined up, scheduled already?
I don't believe so. I don't think there are any of those meetings planned, but we can check on availability of conferences, meeting rooms, check our calendars and pick a date. And I don't think it's going to take that much lead time, since the exhibit's already prepared, and we just need to get the word out. And
we can help you with that.
Okay.
Maybe we can work together to distribute the information.
And leaflet, and leave it to you to figure out how many. I think we do the cloisters and at least
put some at Spencer's Market.
Yeah, very good. And leave some at Spencer's Market, because that neighborhood, it shops there. And actually, I don't think it would be hard if we had enough time to many of the businesses, the restaurants, the market on the small market. And so you'll get back to me, since I stuck my arm up.
Sure. We can work on this as
a
team.
And I'll talk with you.
Yeah, well, to just not compose, but walk.
Help distribute.
Yes.
What if they were out at Farmer's Market in front of Spencer's with their signs? You get a lot of locals.
Absolutely.
Up there.
Absolutely.
I think it's a great place for people.
I can cover that, or find someone. We'll get that covered. So I think we can get, you just set the time, I think we'll get in the usual news releases, and I think we should be able to get publicity, and if no one comes, it'll mean, well, it's okay. But it wasn't high on their agenda, but I think you'll get people coming and appreciating being asked.
We'll be glad to be there.
Could you also please keep in mind that vegetation is a lot prettier than metal fence? And that's really, I think you will get a lot of requests for some vegetation, and because it looks barren right now. And
but you're competing against, you realize, some of the businesses feel the ocean through the better through the fence is far nicer than vegetation.
I think we can have a little of each.
There is no ocean. I eat at restaurants where I have a view.
Yes.
Right.
Damn it.
And also want to be seen by the traveling public.
Okay.
I think we can have a little of each.
I think, and I don't know about the feasibility of the merchants' fair. Joan, can you just discuss with them about how that would work, just in case they can make it?
Can I leave you my card and...
Yeah, I'll put you in contact with John Gardner.
Very good.
Terrific.
Thank you all.
Actually, quickly, I did have a couple of comments, and thanks for the presentation. In part, when we see that we're spending money on our throughways and on transportation corridors, and especially if we're talking about paving or structures that are along our roadways, one of the challenges that we have within the city is obviously urban water runoff and storm water runoff, and I see that you have acknowledged that in the report. I did have a discussion with Dennis Reeves today, who's the design manager and the district landscape architect, and asked him what he thought about us requesting at least an emphasis on some of the best management practices that exist to help us reduce the effect of runoff and potentially have this project create a positive impact on the amount of runoff and our challenges with that runoff and see what we could do to incorporate a high level of absorption into this project to the best extent possible. That was a question I asked him, and he felt like it was a valuable thing for us to request, and felt like it was something we should definitely at least mention tonight. The other thing I thought I'd put in there is that we have talked quite a bit about native landscapes and their impact and or lack thereof impact as far as water needs and so on, and that's personally something that I always appreciate. So those are my comments. Thanks again.
Thank you.
One closing question. You mentioned in terms of funding, some of the funding is for support costs, and so the question is, who's that go to and how long will it last? Because basically, bottom line, it falls to the city.
We're support. The support costs are the creating the project.
Right
so
now.
Didn't mean support in the sense of maintenance. Maintenance is then done by the city. At the city cost or whatever.
Correct.
Certainly the major contribution.
That would be the contribution from the city itself would be the
component. Again, I apologize for not making it clear in my email that the full title was Overview and Possibilities for Conservation's Role in and a description of the role of conservation in an urban water management plan. But I wasn't clear in my communication. But it's good enough that we've covered it as an agenda item, urban water management plan. And NOAA has, this is one done, initiated by the board, and NOAA Smuckler was lead on that. And so I hand it over to you.
Thank you again, Barry. To start off with, I'd just like to thank the board for agreeing to discuss this item. And as you may know from our overhead, water is one of the key resources for our quality of life and for the health of our communities. So as we find time with the board, we look to discuss further opportunities we may have, such as recycling or other options within the community that might not have the time to be fit into the regular busy agendas of the council and the staff. So we appreciate this opportunity, and just to acknowledge again that across the globe we have major challenges currently with water. You can see on the overhead currently the Atlanta and Georgia specifically is in the midst of a severe drought, and they're trying to deal with this problem, which I'm sure they have taken steps towards in the past, but all of a sudden this is at a critical point for them. And so this is a community that's not too far separated from our own. Quickly switching over to our overhead here on the PowerPoint, hopefully. Well, I'll go ahead and walk over.
We should be pretty good at.
Move it to the rest.
As we started realizing this was an item that we would like to spend a little bit of time with, information has recently come out from the Association of California Water Agencies, which is a group of 450 public water agencies, and their focus is on obviously our water supply and making sure that it's steady and sustained to us. And essentially what they've released here is a campaign entitled California's Water, a Crisis We Cannot Ignore. And seemed especially pertinent to our discussion here locally. And this information, which you could probably find at the website calwatercrisis.org or on this overhead, there's a lot of information here. And it kind of lays out the key challenges we have as a state for maintaining a water supply locally to our community. And they kind of sum these up as we move down the page here. And this is on their fact sheet that they've got there. They talk about quite a few things as we move through. This last bullet point essentially sums it up. While we have made great strides in water While we have made great strides in water conservation and efficiency programs, the collective impacts of drought, climate change, increased population demands, court-ordered supply reductions, and potential natural disasters means that conservation alone will not solve this problem. That's what they're submitting to us. And I like that because they do lay out our challenges for our water supply pretty clearly. And part of these bullet points above do point out that our state water supply is susceptible to all of these potential impacts that are listed here. And as we most of us do know, within Morro Bay, state water is our number one water source. We do have wells and we do have the desalination plant, but currently both are fall second to the water supply from the state. So, I would feel that with this statement comes a caveat, which is obviously conservation alone may not be enough to solve this problem. But conservation, indeed, usually is the most affordable and potentially easiest to attain. And it's definitely the place to start before we talk about these things that this CalWaterCrisis.org program may allude to, such as desalination and so on. So part of this discussion tonight is focused on conservation and what opportunities do we have to maintain and enhance our water supply. So, with that, we'll move on to a document that the city has actually developed. It's our 2002 Urban Water Management Plan, and it's an exceptional document and is really the foundation of what the city's done.
So you don't have it in front of you.
Okay. Thanks. So in transition, we talked at our last meeting about inviting a group called San Luis Obispo Green Build Association into our midst, which will be described in a little more depth by our guest tonight. But essentially, it's a fantastic resource to help us, explore and work to enhance our opportunities locally with our water supply. So this is a group that the city's been in agreement with for the last year, and they're working with communities throughout the county and homeowners, businesses, and so on. And you can see from this website here, slowgreenbuild.org, that this is their focus. So with that, I'd like to invite Michael Robertson from Slow Green Build up to give us a bit of an overview about some of our opportunities and lead us forward with the rest of this discussion.
How you doing? My name is Michael Robertson, and want to get an idea of how many of you are familiar with Slow Green Build and what they do and what kind of agreement they have with the city of Morro Bay. So Noah and Roger. Okay, for the rest of you, and I'll kind of elaborate more on what you might not know, Slow Green Build was founded about a year ago, and we are trying to address the issues of energy efficiency, healthy indoor air quality, and resource conservation, primarily in buildings. And with that, because building and looking at our communities is holistic, it goes past just the building and into the community. A year ago, we went to the City Council and to the Planning Commission and kind of explained how Slow Green Build could help each city and the people that live in these cities. And the slow green build is divided into three or four different groups. There's a technical group made up of architects, engineers, environmental, government people, and they've all come together and kind of looked at the latest and greatest in terms of sustainability and techniques and in technology as how can be incorporated in green building. Also, we have an outreach program that meets once a month in San Luis and has an educational program called Learn, Build, Save. And we've gone through in these educational events and invited different speakers to come, and they'll talk about passive solar orientation, energy efficiency strategies with Title 24, healthy indoor air quality in terms of the materials that you can put in your houses and the buildings. And it kind of goes on and on in this series, continually goes on. And now we've actually this year added a series up in Paso Robles. So now we have the two different South County and North County opportunities for anybody, business owners, professionals, homeowners, renters, to come up and kind of get an idea of what choices they have. Also, we have once a month a government committee that meets with a representative from each city and the county, and we go over different ideas. You guys have historically sent some people, and right now Betty Winholtz has been present at these talks. And what we do is we try to look at all the different cities and discuss how they can really facilitate a process and champion these ideas and make it a reality in your community. And some of the cities really become aggressive and really go for it and really champion the ideas. Some of the cities don't have the resources and time, but really get the advantage of we're giving all this information to all the cities, so they kind of get to piggyback on those ideas. So, for instance, we built a kiosk, and it's in your building and planning department, green building. It has a book inside it that says everything you can do from start to finish on green building, putting fly ash in your concrete, using non-toxic paints, increasing your insulation values, incorporating passive solar design and whatnot. It also has a side table type thing that pulls out and has samples of different green materials, and it has a photo of their application and kind of their benefits as related to energy efficiency, indoor air quality, and conservation. And then also has, what's really important for the community, they can bring in their blueprints, and once a month in San Luis Obispo, there's a group of technical folks, engineers, architects, contractors that can help you incorporate green building strategies. Last year, Morro Bay City gave $2,000 to the funds to keep this process up, and we're hoping that you'll see the benefit of this and renew this for this year. But I want to kind of go on to what the technical team is doing in terms of appropriate technology and how it relates to water and the issue at hand right now. And what I want to do is just get an idea, give you guys an idea of where like the future technology is going, to get people excited and kind of inspired, and just put it out there to the general public of what they can do in terms of water conservation. And the appropriate technology group meets every other Wednesday, and we're basically drafting a book in series and looking for water in particular, the whole hydrological cycle, and addressing how water moves and what impact humans have on it. And we're looking at a whole bunch of different ideas. And one of them is if you can catch and slow down the water going into their pavement and just directly to the ocean, you will get more permeability into the surface table of water. So that's pretty important. There's also gray water systems out there. Right now, California, since about 94, I believe, has had a legal gray water law. And California is one of the only states that you actually can reuse gray water in your toilets. And there's different levels of gray water, and this is part of our technical team is kind of educating the community on it. There's one where it goes into a leach field. Obviously, Morro Bay City residents, it wouldn't be as applicable. Other types are where it's actually recycled and used in your landscaping, in your irrigation, so you reduce, you know, the use of bringing in more potable water. But then there also is a type where out of your lavatories and your washing machines and your showers, you can recycle the gray water into your toilets. And there's a system out of Canada, a BRAC system, that's being used in residences all over Alberta, Canada. So we want to give people idea that there's new solutions to these water problems. There's also dual flush toilets. They're, again, popular in a lot of European countries. They can flush at 1.6 gallons or 0.9 gallons. The idea is you urinate and you push a half flush, and if you when you you have the fecal matter, you press number 2. It's a 1.6 flush. Also, the gentleman from the IW&A came in today. In their center in San Luis Obispo, they have a waterless urinal, and that's another solution. And even beyond it, we have some ideas that at this point are not legal in this community, but used in a lot of other places, such as composting toilets, which don't use water at all. They rely on carbon, nitrogen, a proper airflow, and water for complete composting of the nutrients to actually be put back. So there, in that situation, you don't use clean water or any water, and actually you come up with a positive resource. Some other ideas are wastewater treatments, and we like the idea that you are considering tertiary cleanup of the wastewater plant, and we look at ideas such as bioremediation, where you mimic biological pathways, pond systems, reed beds, and you look at the natural technology that exists to reclimate that water, and we're really happy to hear that that's a step that the city's going in. There's also something called low-impact developments, and we really like the idea of you suggesting this to developers. This is such as permeable paving, and I know that the city of Morro Bay did send a representative to one of the workshops that the county put on permeable paving. There's also rainwater gardens. Rainwater gardens are, obviously, when you have water coming down, 80-90% of the time it's a slow rain. And it doesn't necessarily just hit the pavement and go to the ocean at this point. But the extra 15-20% of the time, you get a mass amount of water all at once. And what usually happens, it hits the roads, all that impermeable paving, all the oils, all the chemicals that we've been putting in our fertilizer and stuff go straight to the ocean. And so with rainwater gardens, what you do is it is upstream from your big sewer systems is that you have a tree planted and then a ditch in the ground, a swale covered in rocks, and you allow the water to come into this area for slower permeability, and then it goes up and up, and if it's a real big storm, it does have a system where it can go into the gutter system, overflow, and down. But the idea of rainwater gardens are very popular all over the East Coast. Obviously, there's such things as bioswales as well. Green Build really acknowledges that it takes a partnership between all the communities, the businesses. Being able to, what the guy from the IDMA said, it's really important to do eco shopping. We want to make sure our fertilizers, the detergents we use, are friendly for the environment. Regardless, they're going to the ocean one way or another, so we need to make sure that we have the detergents and one another friendly. Also, we can ask our businesses to look at green business programs. In San Diego, some other communities, they actually have a green business program in their city. And it's not only the material or technology or service that the business provides, but it's how they operate their business. Do they recycle? Are they conserving water and whatnot? And we can look at those for some inspiration. There's obviously not-for-profits like Slow Green Build. I was talking with Noah a little bit about this, and he said, well, look, here's what the estuary program put together. And they put a great 30-page pamphlet together about a bay-friendly home. And it went through all these different strategies. It talked about gray water opportunities. It talked about buying smart with eco-friendly detergents. So it's really nice to see that happening and really, make sure that we all understand what we're doing and say, hey, these guys are doing already and they're doing a great job and here's what we can do over here. Obviously, then there is the government responsibility. What can we do to help facilitate a process through the government? And we, as Green Build, we say, please come to us. We have these meetings once a month where the city does show up. And come, and if you champion the ideas, Slow Green Build will follow. Steve up in Paso, he was very aggressive. He said, okay, I really want to get Paso going. I want to learn Build Save seminar up there. He got it going, and then Slow Green Build brought all the people that could be guest speakers, did all the printing of the materials, did all the invites locally available in our communities. The next criteria is, are there professionals that can actually implement these strategies? The next criteria is, does it cost the homeowner, occupant, the city a lot of money in these different ideas? And then kind of the last one, I mean, there's obviously the impact on the environment, but the last one is, what's the government support? Is it legal at this point? Is it illegal? Does the government provide funding? Is it encouraged? Whatnot. With conservation, it's your bottom line. There's no real change to your behavior. It's available. You just do it yourself. The professional, I know that in your water management plan, the schools are doing education on conservation. It doesn't cost the individual more. They save money. It's a better impact on the environment. But when you go down to these other appropriate technologies, such as rainwater harvesting, gray water systems, composting toilets, bioswales. We just have to address those ideas and look at that criteria. And so this is what Slow Green Build technical team is doing in putting this education out to the community. So I would encourage you to all talk to your planning commission and your city councilors and say, you know, we really support Slow Green Build, what they're doing, and, you know, use them the best you can because they're out there to be used in the best way possible. So if you guys have any questions or thoughts about the program.
Quick question about the presentation that you mentioned Andy Peace could potentially give. Would that be, would she actually come to our city?
Yes.
How long is the presentation?
I think the PowerPoint is 15 to 20 minutes, and then you can have a question and answer. But it's really good. It's how you can use the guidelines. There's a remodel guideline. There's a new construction guideline. There's multifamily. There's commercial. And it really trains the staff on how they can give it selling points, educating the community on some of the benefits. Obviously, you know, the energy efficiency, the healthy indoor quality and conservation.
Roger.
More than a question, a comment. The unchecked growth of human population, I think, is our biggest concern, plus water being a finite resource. You mentioned in your presentation, which I think, by the way, was excellent. I've heard parts of it before when you've come before the city council, and you do a very good job. And I'm going to request that you get into the habit of doing this more often, and preferably at the schools. Uh-huh. The grammar schools. I think if anything is ever going to be done, it's going to be done through education of the younger generation. We people in my generation have been set on our ways for so long that change comes very difficult. And change is what is necessary. Change in how we conduct our lives every day is what is necessary. And that change, I don't think, is going to happen very readily with old folks like me. But with the younger generation, once they see what you have to say and what you show as the results of not doing anything, they'll grab it like that. A kid's mind is a very facile tool for information, and they run with it. And it's with the next generations that I think we're going to see the greatest difference. But it's going to begin with people like you, young people like you, who understand the need and can therefore make it happen. But you have you and your cohorts get together, put a program together with the school system.
Right.
And each week, once a week, go in and explain to the children, the younger generation, why, how, where, when. And I think then we might have hope.
Cool.
And thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Dan?
Well, it seems like we ought to schedule this for our work plan.
Yeah, this is a component of, and it's clear, I think we'll end up continuing the urban water management plan because it's larger in scope than this, but as Noah explained, it's an obvious starting point because it's something we can do, and I think it's very timely because everyone's abuzz about, and I'm going to ask an economic question, a buzz about the rate increases for the sewer, the maintenance of the sewer, and certainly the water plant capacity. So the economic question is, how does this compare with cost-wise, because it does cost money to do these things, compare with just building more plant capacity or more either sewer or water, because that's a question people are attuned to now, and I realize it may take some years to get this fully going, but has anyone ever looked at that?
Yeah, when you look at it, I think Bill Boucher brought up something when he was talking about the chairs or benches, and he said, the wood ones last, but the stone ones last far, 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 and he kept saying it far, far, far longer. So when we look in investments, and one of the engineers said there, well, I'm nervous that if we do this and we have the big storm and we don't have the curbs there, well, what will happen? We'll flood our towns. And then went back to the Public Works Department and said, well, that's important that we catch it at the source, that people are catching the water off the rooftops and are using gray water to recycle it and not adding more new water. And so I think that integrated approach is very important. So yes, people are looking at the life cycle costing, and that's an important point, and it is more affordable. If you look at the bioremediation strategies for wastewater, you'll see a better amount of sludge removal and energy use in actually the facility, and obviously reclaiming our water from the wastewater source and being able to use it in irrigation in parks. You know, you start to bring a whole thing to table. It was interesting hearing Caltrans that they're going to spend $900,000, or somebody is, to go a quarter mile. And I just am like, I just sit here, and I think it's important. I understand the economics. I'm not ignorant to this, you know, reality. I just am like, wow, $900,000 for a quarter mile. And at this point, and I'm not putting any judgment on the city, $2,000 towards a sustainability effort and whatnot, I'm like, you know, I kind of get lost for words. So, yes, I think it's economically feasible, and if we champion the ideas and we start with inspiration and whatnot, it works better.
Not only is it economically feasible, it was kind of in a sense a rhetorical question.
Right.
In an intergenerational sense, it saves money, it's cheaper than building reservoirs, diverting waterways. The more you get away from the natural state of things before the huge impact of the way we live, and I don't mean in any wasteful way, I mean just concrete and things like that, the better our ecosystem, including the sewers and sewage systems, water treatment plants that we build, will work. And I think we're in a community that, while worldwide population is the problem, we have certain limits coming. We're in a position to think of these kinds of things that will really take care for the future, which fits in with really educating the children. Did you have any questions? Or
no, I thought it was excellent, very thought-provoking.
Bill?
You mentioned that a Cayucas family saved enough water from rainwater to use for the whole year. Now, that kind of baffles me, because here in Morro Bay, I just wonder what they stored it in, you know, because here in Morro Bay, we're among the lowest users in the country at about 100 gallons per person per day, which means about 750-gallon drums per person per year. So where do they store this water?
They live in a rural zone, and they catch all the water off the rooftops that goes into a large open cistern. The large open cistern goes down to a pump house that filters the water, and it gets pumped to the top of the hill where they have several 5,000-gallon storage tanks. And all their irrigation water is 100% on recycling their irrigation, so they don't have that added, where in a lot of typical families, 30 to 50% of your water use can be for irrigation.
Yeah. But most of us can't build a storage system on our property.
No, we can't, but I'm just thought, had cloisters been built 10 years from now, that would be the system. Well, that's a different issue. Don't get into the politics. But the point is, we shouldn't say we can't do it. As you plan with these things in mind, you could, or not cloisters, but Colmer, whatever. We've had so many multi-unit projects that I was thinking, but if you don't, like you said, start talking about it. I want to thank you and just quickly say that I guess we can take care of it next month, but obviously there's more to do on the urban water management plan. So why don't we, I suggest we decide to continue this item, even just so next time, if all we discuss is what do we want to focus on in terms of the next discussion and set the date then. So give some thought, given this as background, because I know because of time there were a lot of aspects you didn't cover. I think it's easier to just continue it than
to the next meeting.
To the next
December?
Yes. Just, and also there's, and you know, thinking ahead, your concern, and we heard back from the city council, at least we can discuss the mapping issue and then continue the item.
Right.
And we don't have to continue it to January. It can be continued to February or whatever.
Would it be possible to make a motion regarding this item for action tonight?
Sure. Because that's
fire away.
All right. Thank you. Thanks, Michael, for the presentation. And in light of that information, I'd make a motion that we recommend to the council that they do re-sign with Slow Green Building, continue this relationship, and work with Green.
Can we distill it down into maybe some, you know, some bullet points or something like that that'll be easier to translate?
The motion is that the board, the motion will be reflected in the minutes, and when I'll state the motion in a moment, and then we'll add the letter later. I think the motion is that we're recommending to the board they continue the existing relationship with Slow Green Build.
Yes. Nice.
Period.
Sure.
And can you accept that change? That's not affecting the content of the letter. It's just the recommendation.
Absolutely. That's fine, as long as we also add the conservation.
We'll get to that. So, is that okay? Now, all in favor?
Wait a second. Oh. What about the conservation?
It'll come. Trust me.
Are we doing two motions?
Yes. Trust
me. You haven't had a second on this motion, then.
You just agreed. Okay?
I don't know.
We have a second. And all in favor?
Aye.
Okay. The motion passes unanimously. Now, I think someone needs to propose a second motion that we move that the board, I'll sign it, but you're going to write it, that the board send a letter to the city council alerting them to the motion that was just passed and including the sense of the board of the importance of their efforts in supporting conservation in the city. Water conservation in the city. So the motion would be that the board send a letter alerting the council to the motion that was just passed, and the letter also include the sense of the board, the importance of the city council concentrating on and playing a leadership role in water conservation.
I'll second that.
Okay. Is the Kathy? Is that? Okay. And what Kathy has done is, after, as we did in the last one, she sent me some minutes of whether the sense of it was gotten, you know. Any discussion on that one? And I think they're just waving goodbye too. And then all in favor?
Aye.
So it's unanimous again. And before I ask for the most popular motion of the evening again, a lot was covered tonight, and it shows we can cover a lot, and I think both for our education and the presentations were very, very helpful. So now, and thank you all for your cooperation in moving along and still pretty much finishing at 8. Now the most popular motion of the evening.
I move that we adjourn.
I second.
All, we'll take a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
What?